Hey, it's Liz Kelly, and welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. Season 8 of Game of Thrones begins this Sunday, which means Binge Mode Game of Thrones makes its long-awaited return, with your resident experts Mallory Rubin and Jason Concepcion guiding you through each episode. And to get your fix every Sunday night, Chris Ryan joins Mallory and Jason on Talk the Thrones, a Twitter after-show recapping each episode throughout the season. So make sure you check out the Binge Mode podcast on Apple or Spotify, Talk the Thrones on Twitter, and for even more Thrones coverage, you can head to theringer.com.
What's going on, jabronis? It's Pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
Roast Battle Season 1 champion, Mike Lund.
The King of Sad Stop.
The Silver Lake Heartthrob.
It's Trey Kirby.
It's Nick Mundy.
This is your girl, WWE Superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hey, this is WWE Superstar, Braun Strowman.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I have Shinsuke Nakamura.
Zach Linder.
Dan Black, a.k.a. the Goof Haraja.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening,
You're listening to the Masked Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show. I am your thoroughly exhausted host, David Shoemaker, and joining me on the mask line is none other than the one and only longtime friend of the podcast, Joel Solomon. How you doing, man?
What's up, Shoemaker? This is big. I feel like I was like Batista. I went away 3 years, I got a nose ring, and now I'm back.
Yeah, and you probably slimmed down a little bit, a couple of extra stomach tattoos to cover up the awkward ones of your youth. This is a great new look for you. Yeah. Listen, we're hot off of WrestleMania weekend. For the fans listening, the regular listeners, in case you missed it, I recorded an episode on Monday after WrestleMania and one right on WrestleMania Sunday covering NXT and the other weekend G1. But I haven't talked to you about WrestleMania, so let's do that, Joel. Do you have any thoughts about the granddaddy of them all that we just watched on Sunday? Before we get to Raw and SmackDown, let's go over Mania one more time.
I mean, I don't think it was long enough. First of all, it wasn't long enough. So okay. No. Well, I know you were there. I know you and Jim were there. The one thing I was curious about going into it is, I mean, I assume you saw the brilliant John Oliver piece that he did, mm-hmm. you know, about wrestlers and unions, right?
Yeah.
And he urged everyone to bring a sign or chant. So my only thought is, I was curious, when fans were chanting all weekend, "You deserve it," I assume they were talking about health insurance, right?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. That was the one, like, someone who was it that said this? Was it Dan? Yeah, Dan St. Germain on the show said that his big problem with the Oliver segment was that he didn't have a specific call to action, right? Like, if he had just said, "Here's your chant, take it and
exactly.
go."
Exactly.
And even be specific. At the opening of Monday Night Raw, do this, you know, whatever. And it probably could have worked, but he didn't, and it all just sort of fizzled away. Hopefully that kind of storyline is not over, to use the wrestling term, but there was not a lot of liberal political unrest at WrestleMania weekend this year.
For sure. No, I mean, here's my first big takeaway from Mania. And this is, you know, I'm curious what you guys thought too, is, you know, for almost like 2 years, it was that, you know, Vince doesn't listen to the fans and no one wanted Roman Reigns. We're sick of Brock Lesnar. But if you're sick of it and you hate it for 2 years, you never get this glorious moment. This was like the fans' WrestleMania. You got every single thing you wanted. You got Kofi, you got Seth Rollins, you got Becky Lynch. And it almost reminded me, like, if the Cleveland Browns won every year, well, then, you know, it wouldn't be sweet when they finally won it. And I actually think there was like a little bit kudos to the company of, like, we made you guys suffer. You know, you're right. You ate crap that you didn't want for 2 years, and now here it is. So I think fans should just, maybe next time this happens where you're going to have to eat Roman Reigns for a year, maybe know that there is a brighter light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I think that that's right. I hope that fans appreciate it. And then, you know, the flip side is I hope they don't expect it's going to be like this every time for two reasons. One, because it just functionally can't be this way every time. Two, because there's going right. to be there's going to be disappointment in life. You know, I mean, like, not everything's going to go your way. and the subsection of that is fans disagree most of the time. This was the weird year where fans actually agreed on everything. And that's the same thing happened with Daniel Bryan 5 years ago. These are the only times that WWE's listening to us. But meanwhile, you know, in past years, you have all the, you know, wrestling Reddit pages. People are like acting like we all agree. We don't agree on anything. You know, I mean, people are just if we're in agreement that we don't like Roman Reigns, for instance, or whatever. It doesn't mean we agree on the solution, you know, on what the other option should be. So I hope that people don't get too excited by it. I hope that WWE doesn't react by just booking, you know, the next WrestleMania as just like Roman Reigns wins 10 matches or something, you know, just to let you know that it's not going to be your way every time. But this was one of those times where the storylines and the fans and you know, long-term booking could easily sort of be pushed in the direction of exactly what the fans were chanting for. And that's what I think the lesson WWE takes away from Mania is that, you know, giving the fans what they want is what you're supposed to do. So, you know, as long as we're all united, it should be cool.
Right, right. And then the other thing, I think being there, you know, I'm curious your reaction between the Auburn, Virginia Final Four game yeah. and the main event at WrestleMania, not the best weekend for referees. So... So you have this great moment with Becky Lynch, and now, you know, in the post shine of it, it is weird. You know, I guess clearly Becky Lynch was meant to win, but it's just yes. like such a shame that now this kind of clouds it. But I will say that match made me finally really appreciate Ronda Rousey. And I don't know, you know, it's a shame because I think it's like WWE wanted Ronda Rousey to be what Becky Lynch is. And now, you know, I'm sure it pisses off Ronda Rousey to a, you know, somewhat of a degree. But man, I thought she carried that match. I thought, you know, Charlotte carried that match. And I hopefully when Ronda Rousey comes back, she'll have a different theme song and things will go a lot better.
Well, I'm not going to get into it on any theme song issues this week. We just don't have enough time. But but yeah, no, I mean, Rousey's an all-star. I mean, she's going to, I mean, the ending of that match does... You know, it was unfortunate because it was such a moment. You know, I mean, it's like there's so much of wrestling and whatever. So much of watching, you know, scripted television too is you know, sort of setting expectations. You know, the creators set expectations and the fans react to that, right? And I think that the difficulty is it was such a perfect moment. If we had just had a confident feeling of finality. Which is what I assume they were going for, and it just sort of got botched a little bit. There's rumors that Ronda Rousey was mad when she went backstage. I'm guessing because of the weird pin non-kickout thing that they didn't do that quite right. There was a rumor going around right after WrestleMania that was actually not supposed to be the finish, and that Becky was supposed to, you know, fail at that pin and then make Charlotte tap. I've heard from inside WWE that finish was the right finish. It was just the pinfall was weird. And who knows though? I mean, everybody's trying to cover their asses in situations like that, but it was an odd moment. And only then there was a story today that the referee got fined for that bad.
Yeah.
Count, which is so bizarre.
Super bizarre. I mean, I didn't even know that was possible, you know, but I now I love that we're going to have to have instant replay with refs now, like in actual sports that now in like, On pinfalls, we're going to have a challenge play, clearly.
That would be really great if WWE had instant replay rules where you could throw the challenge flag and they replayed it, but they still had, like, the only video available to the referees to look at it is still, like, the weird cuts that cover up the shoulders coming up, like, cover up all the mistakes. Like on the count of three, the camera just randomly turns, like, a shaky camera angle in the corner, you know? That would be fantastic if they tried to pull it off.
Or at the next pay-per-view, like Michael Cole tosses to Earl Hebner, like the referee expert, and he's like,
oh, yes.
Earl, what do you see in this call here? Walk us through this decision.
Oh my gosh, I would love that so much. And then, but then that would be great if Earl was working kayfabe, right? I mean, if Earl was just like, like still like healing it up. He's still on the $1 million man's payroll or whatever. You know, he's just like just totally working heel. That one just to piss off the fans. That would be, that actually might be great. An instant replay booth manned by a heel. That would be the best thing ever.
See, this is why you should consult with the company.
Here's the thing about consulting with the company. Working for WWE hasn't worked out for a couple other writers this week. But before we get too deep get off the subject, the news coming out is that, well, one writer, Robert Evans, he wrestled Artie, got fired. Who, by the way, he was a fantastic wrestler. I don't know if you ever saw him, but look up his stuff. He was like the most average looking guy ever, although he was tall. And he just like worked Ring of Honor and a bunch of other indies, and he had no muscles, nothing to speak of. He was just fantastic. Just a comedy act. But he was a writer. He's been a writer for WWE for some time, and he was the writer responsible for Bret Hart's speech, which mentioned Vince McMahon by name a couple of times, and that is apparently a big no-no. And so Vince dramatically fired him, apparently in gorilla position, immediately after the speech or something like that, and so that's really awkward. Then subsequent to that, the Road Dog, Jesse James, or Brian James rather, has stepped down as co-head writer of SmackDown after his kind of triumphant ascension of late, and that was due to the show being rewritten above him, over his head, and him getting fed up with it. There's a lot of backstory there. I think some people are saying it was Vince that did it. I think the impression that I get is that it might be a little Machiavellian magic by a certain advocate who hangs around backstage a whole lot. And you know, that's again not a knock. This is how this industry works. But yeah, so it's a weird time to be a WWE referee or writer right now.
I mean, I can't even imagine. Yeah, I mean that whole WrestleMania weekend, though. I mean, you're forgetting that like there's actually so much work that goes into it, and the writers are probably, you know, beyond the events and the parties, they're working their ass off. You know, 18 hours trying to figure, you know, writing up until the last moment. I mean, I can't even imagine. You know, like this is so much that goes into it, and you know. In a writer's room at like the Emmys or the Golden Globes, you're writing jokes and things. It's not the end of the world if a joke gets changed. Whereas this, you know, it's been building for 6 months, and you're probably so married to it. That's why these uncensored shows are the best, to find out what really goes on.
Yeah, that's so true.
But
the Hall of Fame one is really weird because it seems like, well, I guess to me it seems like we won't really know what happened. Because it's always unclear what the writer's role is. Did he take Bret Hart's script and cut it to the right amount of time and streamline it and everything and put it up on a teleprompter? And the question is, did he specifically have the marching orders that you never mentioned Vince's name and then he left it in there because he, for some reason, if he's sort of an editor, then yeah, I guess it is on him. If he's just like, if he's literally a writer, I'm not sure why someone above him didn't have the power to see what was being inputted into the teleprompter or whatever.
But it made the TV version, and I feel like that's when, I don't know, Vince, who knows? I mean, we'll just never know, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other half of it is that the DX induction said Vince's name over and over again. That was part of a joke, because you're not supposed to say his name. And part of me wonders if it wasn't just like a sort of, curtain call situation where like Vince was pissed off about that DX thing. And so he took it out on this like lowly writer who worked on someone else's speech, because someone had to be the Triple H, someone had to bear the brunt of all this violation. But who knows? That's all speculation. I know nothing about that.
It wouldn't be WrestleMania if someone didn't get fired. And it wouldn't be WrestleMania if Triple H didn't have a 45-minute match when the show was already 2 hours over. So,
yeah, I wish that match had been better.
Well, to me, this was like one of the first pay-per-views, especially in WrestleMania, where I was like, my God, I wanted it to be better too. But just how much wrestling has changed, even in 1 year, 2 years, that these guys, like, I just can't watch two guys lock it up and hit each other with steps anymore for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's kind of like they've been aged out. That type of wrestler has been aged out. I was hoping for things. I was hoping, you know, maybe Randy Orton would make an appearance. You know, who knows? You know, we knew, you know, Triple H would have someone run out. You know, I was in a weird way hoping that, you know, Chris Pratt ran out or some of the Guardians of the Galaxy ran out for Batista. Like, but it needed something. It needed, you have to elevate that match in some sort of way.
I agree. I mean, there were a lot of different things they could have done with it. I appreciate the concept of kind of keeping it simple. What they did made a lot of sense in terms of history and storyline and everything like that. But yeah, I mean, it was just a really long match in the middle of a really long night. And the good thing about it is if you want to find a bright side, it was the first WrestleMania. It was the first WrestleMania in a while where like that was the only thing we had really that was like a Legends match. And the show would have, if you can say the show would have been better off without it, that says a lot about what WWE is going for it, you know, on the regular right now, right? I mean, everything else they had on the card was, you know, pretty fantastic stuff.
For sure.
How long has it been since it feels like we had a real upper card of performers that all are kind of up there at the top? You know, I mean, what WWE is needed for the longest time is to be able to say, yeah, we have 10 major stars. Like we have 10 most important stars. This isn't just the John Cena company or then the John Cena and CM Punk company or whatever. This is Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston, Becky Lynch, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins. You know, all these people are sort of co-equals up there. And you know, I think that's great for the future of the company.
No, and that's why it'll always be, you know, this one will be remembered as like the fans WrestleMania, the 7-hour WrestleMania for sure. But, you know, yeah, I mean, that's why I think they put Undertaker the next night. You know, this was kind of, you know, a moment for their newer guys to shine and much deserved.
So I was at Raw. I have not watched Raw, so I don't really know what the announcers were saying at any point during the show. But I do want to talk a lot about Raw because, well, we talked about, you know, the writing teams and we talked about how WrestleMania was long but there's still a lot of good stuff going for it. From the moment that Raw opened until the bar ran out in the main event, that was about the most perfectly executed episode of Raw I could imagine. This goes back to what you were saying about the John Oliver stuff before. Whether or not it was a John Oliver chant, there were no traditional Raw after WrestleMania wacky chants until the bar came out and the fans just said like, okay, fine, fuck you. But they were doing so well by just, I mean, up until that point.
You know what it was? It was the bar that came out. I have to agree with you. It was such a perfect culmination and it was a great Raw until the bar ran out because, you know, we're tired of Sheamus. We're tired of the bar and you want to see that match, you know, even if you know deep down, you know, you're not going to get a clean finish to that match, but you know, it can, I guess, you know, it's a lot to ask for. And you know, I think people were actually nervous because it was like, oh God, how long now the question is, how long are they going to let Kofi keep the belt? You know, 2 weeks. And then you're like, oh my God, not even 2 weeks. So
yeah,
look, I mean, it was a bummer. It was a bummer to end Raw that way for sure. I think it sucked the wind out of the place. But then again, you also got, we'll get that match hopefully eventually.
Well, yeah. And listen, sitting in the arena, everybody that was within within earshot of me that I was within earshot of knew that that match wasn't going to go to a finish. Right. I mean, I don't think anybody, especially because while we're sitting in the arena, they're running commercials for Kofi's victory celebration, WrestleMania victory celebration on SmackDown the next night. Like it was clear that they weren't going to do, that they weren't just going to have Seth walk away or even Kofi walk away with both titles.
We have t-shirts to sell also.
But we had 2.5 hours. We had 2.5 hours to imagine what the schmoz was going to be. And by the time the bar ran out, I think everybody there had talked themselves into Roman Reigns turning on Seth Rollins or, you know, just something monumental, you know, or somebody debut, the Undisputed Era comes out of nowhere or whatever. Sting comes down from the rafters, whatever it is. But yeah, when you give people time to imagine what could be, reality is never going to live up to it. And if and that's reality is the bar making a run in, I mean, come on, that's not even like trying to live up to it. That's a whole different thing.
No, I mean, it's brutal. I don't know who the run in you got, and I'm sure we'll work our way back to it, is, you know, Lars Sullivan, but I don't think they were going to give Lars Sullivan that spot. No. Or who knows? That probably might have been better than the bar, but.
Well, at least that sets up Lars Sullivan. I think the problem with the bar, and listen, I loved SmackDown. I think the bar is actually, the bar and Drew McIntyre are a great set of opponents for the New Day. You know, I think it's a really cool trio, and I love Sheamus and Cesaro. But there's just nothing. I mean, there's no, you know, they were, it's not like they've been held off TV. It's not like there's any questions about what they could accomplish. You know, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, any other episode of Raw or SmackDown, and the sort of thing that would happen in the first hour, not in the main event. You know, I mean, it's not, it felt immediately like they were just out of tricks, you know, and they had to go that route. And that's fine. You know, if the fans, I mean, really, what
would you have put Sami Zayn there then?
Oh man. I mean, yeah, you got to put somebody there who's then going to be in the picture. I mean, the thing with the bar is that you knew, even the fans knew, that there wasn't really, like, you know, this wasn't going to lead to anything. I mean, I guess it's leading to what's going on in SmackDown, but it's not, this isn't a shot. I mean, the honest thing would have been right for the bar to come out at the beginning of the show and just be like, we want to fight you guys. And that would have been a lame main event going in. So they knew that. So they pulled this champion versus champion thing that was just, you know, I mean, it's fine. It's wrestling. I'm not that mad. But the fans reacted. I mean, I sit here every year and complain angrily about how the fans at the Raw after WrestleMania conduct themselves. That happens every year. This year, first of all, congratulations for the first 2 hours and 55 minutes of just being totally great fans doing exactly, you know, reacting in totally appropriate ways. And then when they flipped out at the end of the show, I was right there with them. I have never been more excited to see a beach ball. You know, that beach ball was, all of those beach balls were appropriate given what was going on in the ring. And I don't want to see beach balls in the regular, but that's, you know, that was a crappy ending to an otherwise perfect night.
Well, no, it was perfect. And then so, you know, I guess as we go through Raw, then the other way to look at it is, with their other champion now, with Becky Lynch, I'm curious what you thought of now setting her up with Lacey Evans.
It feels a lot like Daniel Bryan winning and going straight into a feud with Kane. Like, it's not, I mean, he and Kane had a backstory, but it's just like, if you want to be skeptical about WWE's commitment to Becky Lynch, this gives you all of the fuel that you need, but don't be skeptical, because this might not be a great idea, but Lacey Evans is a real favorite of the important people backstage in WWE. They have a lot of faith in her potential, and it's not, I guess the lesson you take, I mean, the positive spin lesson you take is that, you know, you come out of WrestleMania, new champions will often get like kind of a reset feud, you know, unless we're continuing the feud that was in the main event, we're not. You kind of get a little bit of a reset feud, and then you see where your reign's going to take you. But it's not about this month. And this is another thing about the fans getting what they want. You know, Becky can't wrestle Charlotte and Ronda every month at every pay-per-view. And if she does, it would get really boring really fast, right? I mean, we're not gonna. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what the right move is here, and I'm interested to see if Lacey can do anything. I think that it, you know, I'm not super excited about it, but I'm interested.
See, I wasn't that excited about it either, but now here's exactly what you said. We've seen Bayley, we've seen Sasha Banks, we've seen Charlotte, we've seen Ronda Rousey. I'm actually now weirdly all in on Lacey, because you haven't had a women's wrestler in their division that actually had a gimmick. Yeah. In a while. And I think if they go all in on this and they give her like a backstory, like why she's upset with like Becky Lynch, like that she doesn't like working class, you know, the working class Irish, like they're trash, or that like she was mad that she didn't get invited to the Becky Lynch's celebration party. Like I would go all in on this, that she's like an upset divorcee. Like I would have her write thank you notes and like put them on, like after a victory, like put a thank you note on her opponent.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I would actually like go all in on this weird gimmick. Because to me, the women's division has been so good. It's been so raw that like, I actually wouldn't mind like a breath of like, she's this bizarrely weird, like, I don't know, like she gets mad in promos in the back that like her car didn't get validated and punches the attendant. Like, I think that'd be hilarious. That's why I did want to tell you, regardless, the women's division, even beyond the on-screen stuff, it's so good off-screen because the women's division Twitter is like new NBA Twitter.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're bringing this up. Go ahead.
Leading up to WrestleMania, I mean, you think like what Antonio Brown and like, you know, Joel Embiid are doing on Twitter is good. Becky Lynch was so good on Twitter over the last month. And now I love how she called Lacey the new Charlotte. Like already on Twitter, she's like, oh, great. They've got the new Charlotte coming after me. Women's division Twitter is what the men should be doing.
Yeah, I totally agree. You're talking about not being many like real heavy gimmicks in the women's division. I think that's, yeah, it's a deliberate move, you know, to kind of make it feel more like real sports, but it also allows them to be themselves, to be themselves on Twitter in a way, you know. I mean, you're kind of, even though this is the very top of the women's card, they feel less restrained by kayfabe and less restrained by storyline, even though they're all tweeting in kayfabe and in storyline, just because they're able to be themselves, you know. They don't have to tweet in like fake accents it's a better situation. We'll see how Lacey Evans fits in. I do think that I love the idea of her putting a thank you note on her felled opponents. And you know, we'll find out a lot when she actually gets in the ring. And you know, we see a little bit about this. I like her. She's got a good working punch. So, you know,
that's something.
I think she's only wrestled one match on TV. Am I right in that? I'll double check, but,
I think other than the Royal Rumble, I maybe one match. So that's why it was like an interesting decision. Like you know, as opposed to the male champions, you're getting here, we're rolling right into it with Becky Lynch. So I don't know. It's an interesting push. And it's also interesting to now see Becky Lynch, you know, as a champion and how fans, because even down to the name, like Becky Two Belts, I mean, Becky Lynch can do nothing wrong every step of the way. Like, she's just so cool, and everything she says on the mic, you know, everything she does. So now we see what happens.
She does this great thing that I need to, I'm not going to adequately describe it here, but what the fuck, it's my podcast. She does this great thing when she's cutting promos, when she wants to make a point, she goes into this, like metronomic monotone at the end that I think it's a Conor McGregor tick that she's picked up. It might not be him. I don't, but where she'll end a sentence by just like, you know, she's has her regular sort of angry Irish brogue, but then it just goes to this like, I can't even do an accent, but she like ends with just like, it gets like her voice deadens and she's just like, and I'm not gonna do that again, like, and the accent's almost almost gone.
That was awesome.
It's haunting. It's really good. I really like it. I mean, but it just shows that you, like you said with the Becky Two Belt, she's like, it's like a tweak every week. There's a little bit of something new, and she, you know, that's what's gonna make her last. You know, that's what's gonna make her care. I don't want to belabor this because it's, you know, whatever. But the Iconics won the Iconics won the women's tag team match at WrestleMania. They're the new champs. There's a lot of weirdness going on with Sasha Banks. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. Sasha Banks was MIA for the Wendy Williams show. There's also some injuries. I don't want to get too deep on, but Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles both potentially suffered injuries at WrestleMania. I'm just connecting all these weird MIA, these weird moments, but, And then Paige on SmackDown, to bring this back around, said that she's going to show up next week with a new tag team to challenge the Iconics. There's a lot of chatter about who that may be. If it's the, you know, a certain duo from NXT. If it's like, you know, the Jumping Bomb Angels or you know, being reincarnated, we'll see what happens. But so there's a lot of cool stuff going on in the women's division overall. And, you know, I think we have I'm excited about the future. Let's jump back to Raw real quick. How do you feel about Lars Sullivan? He was on both shows.
This is where I'm at. Cause I thought about this long and hard. It's almost like I wish Vince had like an analytics guy in the office. Okay. And, mm-hmm. and I tell you this because over the last 5-6 years, you can see his biggest pops have been his biggest fan favorites have been guys like Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Kofi Kingston, Seth Rollins. And if you had like an analytics guy to show Vince, like, hey, you know, these big heavyweight guys that can't do big spots off the ropes, you know, with big beards that look like the Wyatt brothers, they're not clicking, Vince. And if you had this analytics guy to show him this information, maybe they make the big push to someone that isn't Lars Sullivan. Now that said, Lars Sullivan is a goddamn monster.
Yeah.
And, will is going to terrorize people, but
I mean, we ran a piece on the ringer.com just today, by Oliver Lee Bateman, who is a certified expert on, pro wrestling and particularly pro wrestling body types. We have a couple of other cool things in the works with him in that genre, but he's himself like a competitive, he's been a competitive weightlifter and bodybuilder and stuff. And is really into just like, you know, just the history of bodies. So he was mm-hmm. when, as soon as Lars Sullivan got called up, we decided that he had to write a piece. So, but basically it's about how Lars Sullivan is part of a long tradition of weird monster wrestlers, starting with the French Angel way back in the 40s, who is the was actually the model for Shrek, the Disney version of Shrek. No, DreamWorks version of Shrek. So Google the French Angel, everybody. If you don't know this somehow, it's pretty amazing. But they've made Lars Sullivan into a modern day version, or not even a modern day, and just a version of this, that kind of like old monster archetype.
Shrek.
And yeah, and it's the point is that he's an anti-analytics guy. Like, I mean, I think that you made exactly the right point. If they're gonna push him to the moon, it's gonna get irritating. But there is definitely, like, if you want to talk about analytics, there's an inefficiency in the market for an old school monster. You just have to be able to figure out how to use him just right without overdoing it, and then be willing to pivot off of it and turn him into like a, you know, a breakdancing monster at some point when the crowd's getting tired of him. But
here's immediately what I thought was, and it actually calls to the night before, and I'm sure a lot of people felt this way, is when you watch WrestleMania, probably like the one guy who got lost in the shuffle was Braun Strowman. And Braun Strowman did a great job. The Weekend Update thing was, you know, mildly, you know, hilarious. But mm-hmm. the second Lars Sullivan walks out, you're like, oh man, there's Braun Strowman's opponent. There's where Braun can finally have a feud. Because it was kind of disappointing that Braun Strowman just kind of got lost in the shuffle at Mania.
Yeah, it is. I mean, somebody had to get left out. I was really kind of surprised that it was him, but...
super surprised.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, what are you going to do?
One of the big, you know, developments at, you know, in Mania season is that Braun Strowman is apparently just like cutting body fat like crazy and now wrestling with his shirt off. I don't know if that's to like regain favor in the front office or what, but he looks like a whole new man. And I think, you know, him going up against Samoa Joe is a good look for both those guys. I just hope they both come out of the feud looking good. I want to get your take on a couple other things. I haven't talked to you in a while. How are you on Aleister Black and Ricochet? Are you enjoying their time on the main roster?
It is. I mean, who wouldn't be happy?
Yeah.
You're in the small time they've been given, it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting. Like when any of these guys, you somehow get some time on the main card. You know, it's tricky. It really is. You know, hard for them to shine.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been doing really, really well so far, given especially, like you said, the trajectory of previous people. And then one last, I mean, we touched on it before, but The Undertaker made a shocking appearance on Monday Night Raw. The valet who I was there with had long said that the only thing, like she would come to wrestling shows with me, and the only thing she was ever waiting for was to see The Undertaker's entrance live in person. And I was like, oh, that ship may have sailed. And then we got it on Monday night, and it was probably the most important moment in our relationship ever. Talking about guys who've shredded and look good. I mean, The Undertaker looks like he's in the best shape of his career, and he's like, I believe, 89 years old. So this is it was really something. I guess he's supposed to work. He's supposed to do the Saudi Arabia show, I guess.
Wait, so when Elias said so perfectly, the next person that walks through that curtain is a dead man, did you know on that, or did you know on the first dong when the music hit?
No, I knew when it was dead man. I was like, you know, there's something about The Undertaker, especially at this age, this vintage. I mean, I heard that The Undertaker met with Vince over the weekend. I heard it before WrestleMania, and you know, usually that means something. But even then, when he said dead man, I was like, why are they just teasing us with this Undertaker moment? Because I thought that that's who they were talking about, but it wouldn't have shocked me if it was just like they had done the dong and then he appeared on the Jumbotron or something, you know, like to set up a match at the next Crown Jewel or Super or Greatest Royal Rumble or whatever.
It was so perfect that's what they should have done to the Lakers season. Like when LeBron announced when you're eliminated for the playoffs, like the Undertaker should have come out and just tombstoned him. It's same with Dwayne Wade's retirement and Dirk. Like that. Now I want Undertaker to just show up at things when time's up.
I hope that I'm a serious Dallas Mavericks fan. And it's time for Dirk to go. I mean, just physically he's not there, but it would be great if he had an Undertaker-esque second, like last act to his career where he just shows up. You know, he'll just show up in like the first round of the playoffs every year, make an unadvertised appearance, sink a couple of threes, leave his gloves in the middle of the ring and walk off like that, in the middle of the court and center court and walk off. Like that would be fantastic.
This is another Ringer article for sure. Yeah. how we can revive old athletes once they're no longer on the playing roster. Yeah. Perfect. Well, I'm glad she got to see it live in person. It is. That is like, you want to see Hulk Hogan make an entrance. At least at one point you did. And now you want to see The Undertaker do his entrance. Yeah. It is a bucket list moment.
Yeah, it's super cool. And The Undertaker, I mean, really, that's what I said last year when he wrestled Cena and the match was like 30 seconds long. Like I thought that the cool thing about that was that he could keep coming back without having to stress about having matches, right? I mean, that just sort of established the situation where all we really want is the entrance and the finish. You know, we don't need the in-between. We don't need the vegetables.
Yeah.
We got to get out of here soon. But before we do, I've neglected, because of the WrestleMania hubbub, this new Viceland series, The Dark Side of the Ring, which is fantastic. And I got to say,
tremendous.
I could not have had lower expectations for this. I'm going to be totally honest. I was so
you know it's good when it should have been on the WWE Network. That's how good it was.
Yeah, it was really, really great. And it was, you know, I thought that they would have trouble getting the right people to talk or like filling it out. I thought it would come off as hammy. You know, I thought, and the fear is always you think it's going to be done by people who don't know what they're talking about. You know, who don't quite get it. Or that, you know, not even in a bad way, that is, if it's targeted towards a more general audience, then it's not the same as, you know, targeting it for a wrestling audience. And that's who we are. But the Bruiser Brody episode, I don't even know. Have they aired the Bruiser Brody and the Macho Man episode so far, or just the Macho Man?
You can watch the Bruiser Brody online.
Online, right, but, right, right. Okay.
But Macho Man aired last night.
All right. So I've seen both of those. It's really good. What was your take on the Macho Man episode?
The Macho Man episode first of all, you get promos I'd never seen before. Linda Balea, by the way, should have her own show because she has the best stories. I was telling Jim it should be just story time with Linda Balea because it was perfect. But I mean, even hearing stories I just never heard. It was fantastic. I mean, that for a lot of people, like Miss Elizabeth was their first childhood crush. Like Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth were, you know, Brad and Angie to people. So to hear that backstory was I thought incredible, and it was super well done. And you know, maybe just really getting insight to the Macho Man. You know, I think you always had a feeling, but to the nth degree of how he could not separate the character from the actual person.
Yeah, I mean, it's always the rap on Macho Man. It's to me, it was a little bit of a departure. Well, one, I mean, from the Bruiser Brody episode, just in the Bruiser Brody episode is about a fucking, like, stabbing murder in Puerto Rico. I was kind of expecting the Macho Man one to get a little bit grislier and not, I mean, whatever. But then, like, I mean, I think they had to walk. It was a fine balance, you know, because his brother was on there. You know, I mean, I don't know. But yeah, he was a domineering, controlling in a bad way, totally nutso guy. And, you know, we like our wrestlers in the modern era to be just sort of amplified versions of themselves. And that's certainly what we were getting. Maybe that was the power of the Macho Man when we didn't even know that's what we were getting.
Well, the real takeaway was, at least in the 80s and early 90s, probably not the best idea to have your wife involved in a storyline on television. I mean, that was probably the real, and to just be around that. But I don't know, some of those promos, like, actually, my favorite moment was when Scott Hall said, look, if I was a chick, I would have banged Brandy.
Oh, that was so good.
Filled with great moments, like that table showing Hulk's table where everyone carved things into the table. Uh-huh. I mean, really, like, I thought it was like a must watch. I mean, it was disappointing that there was no mention of Macho Man's rap career, which it was disappointing. But I mean, that's its own documentary.
Yeah. Well, they're actually working on a full Macho Man documentary right now. I don't know. I don't know how much of that is out there, but no, it's out there. But yeah, hopefully there'll be a whole section on the rap career, on his real life friendship with Crush. I think that was one of the underreported, underinvestigated parts of his life. And
you just forget, like, what a, you know, I mean, charismatic kind of part of, you know, for a valet who didn't say much, you know, just, and to finally hear, like, the backstage stories of how her and Linda were friends. And I don't know, I will say an amazing Halloween costume would be, Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth. I don't know if you and your lady friend would do that for Halloween, but the wedding outfit is, I can't believe I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, that would be really fantastic. Oh, man, I love Macho Man so much. I could watch
also,
that
put
stuff all day.
Put Jake the Snake on anything and it's good. Like, Jake the Snake should be narrating like a Werner Herzog esque documentaries
so
on Animal
good.
Planet.
He's so good. And he looks great too. He looks like it's like CGI Jake the Snake Roberts. Like, I don't know what's going on. The whole presentation there is, I don't know.
GDP yoga.
Well, I know, but he's been doing the yoga for a while. He got a haircut or something. He looks fantastic. Got a nice tan.
No, Ian Scott Hall looked amazing. I'm now officially sold. I need to do GDP yoga.
It's pretty good. I've done it myself. It's responsible for all of my giant muscles. Listen, we gotta get out of here. Hopefully we can get them as a sponsor. Jim, can you look into that?
Sure.
I'll do DDP yoga every day if they sponsor the show.
Oh, they won't want to do that. No.
I'll do it live on Instagram for all the whole, for all, I was gonna say the Hulkamaniacs.
Yeah, they're out. They're out.
Oh, really? That's sad. All right. Well, I gotta try. One cool thing about Monday Night Raw, but before I get out of here, Joel, do you have anything you want to plug?
I mean, Baron Corbin. I'm good. I'm good. I it's good to talk to you. We should not go this long. And I will talk to you next WrestleMania, I guess. Hopefully before.
Oh, no, no. I'm going to bring you back for whatever the next terrible pay-per-view is, just because you can you can tell me how terrible it is and make it sound funny. Money in the fast lane. We'll see you then, man. Thank you so much for doing this. One cool thing about Monday Night Raw is that after it went off the air, being there live, I mean, after it went off the air, Seth Rollins brought Roman Reigns and then Dean Ambrose to the ring to let everybody sort of bid a formal farewell to Dean Ambrose. It was a cool moment. It was really cool to just see someone bid farewell appropriately and have the fans show him, you know, real respect. It was just a really touching moment. I don't know if there's any video of it online. I'm sure there is, but definitely worth checking out. Definitely worth feeling that getting into your wrestling feels. It was a cool moment, but, I don't know how we're going to end the show going forward, but this was a big finish for that man and his career, if indeed his WWE career is over. So one last big apologies to Dean Ambrose. We'll see you back here next week, humanoids.
We are desperately out of time. The tape machines are rolling. We'll see you next week on the Masked Man Show.
Oh, with my giant muscles.
Look, if I was a chick, I would have banged Brandy.
And I'm not gonna do that again.